Good morning, everybody. For those of you that I haven't met, which I think is actually everybody, my name is Aaron Wishon. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer at Cook Children's Healthcare System. So I'm very proud and thankful to be invited to this event. And I have really enjoyed this week. So I just can't tell you enough how much I've appreciated that. Relative to my experience, I'm kind of an IT mutt, so to speak. I have about 25 years of IT experience. I don't know whether to say I haven't been able to hold a job or I just get like intellectually curious and decide to job hop, but my wife and I have spent a number of years and a number of moves between states, roughly about every 5 years or so, and then we had a child. So she's a sophomore this year at Prosper High School in Prosper, Texas, about 30 miles north of here, and so for the time being, I'm tethered to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But in any case, for those of you that I haven't talked to, I'm an early riser. So I'm usually up about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I usually get into work about 5:30 in the morning. I know, right? Yeah. Traffic is something. And when you have a 60-mile commute, having any is not an option. So in any case, I do appreciate the opportunity to be here. I have a question for you. How many people enjoyed yesterday and last night, most importantly? I agree. So, being a lifelong learner that I am, I heard you hadn't even played before. Oh, somebody said that you hadn't, but anyway, well, so being the good steward of IT security and IT privacy and all that kind of stuff, I had an aha moment last night. It was about 8 o'clock, which, as I mentioned, I go to bed about 4, which means about 8:30, Aaron's getting pretty tired, and it's time to roll into bed, right? So I'm out there playing cornhole, and it's probably my 6th beanbag where I'm like, ah, elbow pop, hip pop. I'm going, what was that? Am I getting old? Am I not acting my age? What, you know, and so that was issue one. These are all in my head at the same time, right? Issue two, I forgot to eat dinner. So I'm going, okay, peanut butter and jelly sandwich when I get home and a glass of milk. I can handle that. You know, issue three, these fine folks are all relaxing and having fun because their presentations are over. I have to present the next morning. So I better get my happy butt up the street and get to bed and start thinking about what I'm going to talk about. So I guess there's a bit of a bonus or a curse, depending on how you look at it. If you're the last presenter, you get to know everybody, which means you're very comfortable in terms of speaking, but everybody's presented content and there's been a lot of overlapping content, right? So what I'm going to try to do today is focus on some things maybe that we haven't talked about. I'll gloss over some things, but please make this as interactive as the last presentation. I enjoyed that so much. Y'all did such a great job, and it's going to be a hard act for me to follow, right? So I'm very, very, very nervous. Let's address the fish in the room, so to speak, right? So we talk about phishing. How many people know what a fish is, what phishing is? Okay, how much do you want to talk about the definition? We all know? Okay, fair enough. So, one of the... Shoot. Maybe for the benefit of the podcast, we can talk about the fishing.
Oh, sure. But maybe just cover some different varieties, spearfishing, whaling, et cetera.
I've got three I'll talk about, right? So, the top one, and somebody mentioned it earlier, and again, this is where it gets a little challenging to make sure I'm not being repetitive with the content, but... You may hear of whaling or CEO phishing, right? And somebody mentioned a situation where a CEO was impersonated, and unless you've ingrained, and you're going to hear me talk a lot about culture, and you've really started to ingrain within your culture what's right or what's wrong, regardless of who is telling you to do something, you're going to have a challenge with somebody wanting to question the authority of somebody in a senior leadership position, especially if it's something that is sort of kind of related to what they do. We actually had a spear phishing attack. Now, this was not the CEO, so I'm not going to call it whaling, but it was spear phishing, meaning that email that came from one of the bad guys or gals out in the internet came in, was addressed to our chief financial officer, and it was about providing basically tax documents. And so the CFO sent it to his entire team saying, hey, what is this? And the team immediately said, well, this isn't us. And so they powwowed, like a neighborhood watch. And again, I like to use that term because I think it's important. You know, the gopher thing in cubicles is alive and well, and you want that. You want somebody to pop up and go, hey, did you see this email? What is this? And so that's just an example of spear phishing and literally the types of things that you need to look for. The other, I'm sorry.
Is it on? Yeah. To our utility company in Springfield. The only deal was the controller sent out W-2s on all the employees to the hacker. And they thought it got it from the CFO. It went to CFO, looked like CFO to like a director to controller. Controller sent it out. Didn't say anything. It was complete. Passed in the hall a week later and said, hey, I wanted you to know I sent that out the same day you requested it. And she said, what are you talking about? That's the only way it was discovered. She said, well, you wanted all the W-2s uploaded to this site. I got it all done. Same day you requested it. She said, it wasn't me. And yeah. There it went. And they have the year-long protection now, but it was over 500, so they had to do the media. And this is our utility company. So then everybody, what about my account? You know, it was employee information, yep. But everybody then started questioning, are they watching my credit card or my ACH checking account? So that exact same thing happened, and it worked.
Yes, and we'll talk about some examples. I've got some fairly recent successful attacks, and we'll talk some about the impacts that have happened as a result. So in any case, and then the third piece, which is what we would call anonymous and or mass phishing, meaning that these are just the mass barrage of emails that come in. No different than many of you all, we use email protection. We use Proofpoint to basically filter our emails. And so it's very rare for something to actually get through, but nonetheless, the size and the magnitude of the impact is what makes phishing so dangerous for organizations, because it literally is letting somebody in the walls. And in our case study today, I'm going to talk a little bit, because this is a very interesting organization. Me having walked in the door, this will be month number 3 for me. I've had a great start hitting the ground running. I'll talk about that in just a minute. But this organization has made significant investments in technology. It's marvelous. And I'll show you a list of all the stuff that we've got, the toys, if you will. But relative to policies and procedures, writing things down and telling our story, we would never do well with an OCR audit. We wouldn't. We wouldn't be able to tell that story. We might if everybody kind of stopped what they're doing and started writing everything and really, you know, hopefully getting something back to them, because I think it's an email that you get, right? You get an email saying, we're looking for this documentation. So maybe you get 10 or 15 days notice. Wyatt, is that about right?
So I've had the experience of dealing both with a desk audit, which was part of their program that they put together. And yes, it was an email. Tracy actually received that as the privacy officer. And we had, I think, 15 days it was to respond with all the required documentation.
Yes, I think the first, we had two. First round was 15 days, but then the second one, we had to provide all of our business associates to them.
I don't remember the email specifically. Yes. I'll take her word for it, but yeah. And
go ahead.
Yes.
List of them.
They wanted it wasn't just business associate name, it was business associate contacts, email address, phone number, et cetera. The second piece is I had the experience of working with our privacy team on the provider side of an actual data breach that we had to report of over 500, and that's a completely different request.
Yep, totally. So in any case, the moral of the story is the more that you can put together ahead of time, it's going to be much easier. And in our case, our organization is undergoing an Epic implementation, so we can't exactly stop implementing Epic. We can't exactly have all those administrators that have all their other applications that they're working on suddenly divert over and start generating documentation. It just isn't going to happen. So, when I say we wouldn't survive it, I actually don't think that's true. I think we would. It's just that I have some, emergency break the glass stuff I'm going to have to pull together in order to hopefully tiptoe my way around it. And that is something you should think about. If you have not gotten all those things, try to highlight the most important. Try to do a quick assessment of some sort that shows, hey, I've got X number of systems. 80% of those have 2,000 medical records or more. Those are really the things you should be focusing on relative to documenting, you know, those types of things. So I'll also talk a minute about culture, and I'll share an example. I like to tell stories. So some folks, as the week progressed, talked about, well, your patient satisfaction scores are incredible. How did you get there? What, you know, what is that? And what I would point to you again is it's culture, right? It's all about the culture. And from the time that I applied for the job at Cook Children's, I knew there was something different. The first thing I had to do before I had even completed the application process was fill out a 200 questionnaire personality assessment. No kidding, it was an hour and a half. And if you're hunting for work, those start to get a little monotonous if you've not been in that, you know, mode for a while. I did some consulting, and so I decided it was not for me to do that. I'd rather be gainfully employed. So I focused on things that I found to be interesting, and I suddenly thought, well, this is interesting. Why are they doing that? And it was questions like, you know, given a situation where you had to choose between what the nursing manager said versus what a coworker said about the safety of an issue and whether that issue was going to get covered up, which would you pick? So you're like, aha. Well, in hospitals, have you heard of just culture? Has anybody heard of the concept of just culture? Well, just culture is predominantly something you'll see within a healthcare environment, specifically within a clinical environment. And it really speaks to the attention that's being given these days to preventing, for example, bloodborne infections, uncovering why did something happen, whether it was a near miss or other type of sentinel event. But literally, not only do we want to scrutinize what that event was, we want to have an environment and a culture that says it's okay to report this stuff. It's okay to push back on a provider or a physician and say, hey, did we check that that was the left or the right side that we were going to perform that procedure on? Did we mark that? And instead of a physician that you could imagine being very infuriated that their judgment or that their judgment's being questioned, it's about, no, we're good. Or let's ask a second opinion. Let's verify it. So that does a couple of things. One, it exposes those events so that people don't go underground and try to hide them. And that's a big deal. How many times, and I've, you know, led IT organizations where we basically reboot a router or we trip over a plug. It happened to our organization just earlier this week. Somebody tripped over a plug and took down the entire internet. It was a really silly aha moment. It was, but you know what? We laughed because it wasn't a virus or somebody that had infiltrated the network. It was a facilities person. Now, we still question why the dual power supplies were plugged into one power strip. That was on us. But that's an example of just culture, where you're really more interested in the root cause, and you're more interested in understanding, did we learn from that so that we can prevent that from happening again? And I would say to you that if you have that kind of a foundation relative to your culture, stuff like phishing and trying to create an environment of security culture, I grew up in a very small town. We had neighborhood watches. People had lived there 15, 20, 30 years. Everybody knew exactly when something was going wrong in the neighborhood or when something was suspicious and stuff like that. That's the kind of culture that you want to create. You've got employees that have worked together forever. You want them to have these conversations. You want them to be talking about, hey, I'm seeing something suspicious. And so that's what we'll focus on today. So now, if you didn't notice, and this is why I have my laser pointer, that's me. I'm in the fishbowl. Yeah. This is kind of like Kramer. Did you see Seinfeld, the portrait or the bust of Kramer? You know, it's disturbing, yet I can't look away. But for me, certainly being new to my organization, all eyes have been on me in terms of what are we going to do? What happens if the OCR comes? What happens if fill in the blank? And so, you know, as you read from the summary of the presentation, how comfortable are you? Are you a fish out of water? Are you comfortable that you've invested in technology? Are you comfortable that there's been a lot of companies in the news lately, and why are they in the news? And they are, for the most part, very, very well-funded companies, yet this kind of stuff happens. And again, I'd argue you can spend all kinds of money, keep spending the money, even have, you know, metrics that say that you're doing a good job. But if you haven't addressed that culture, you're going to end up having an issue. So with respect to Cook Children's, we have got it all. Firewalls, data loss prevention, endpoint protection, cyber threat exchanges. Is anybody else doing cyber threat exchanges? They're awesome. It's kind of like having a tripwire that says somebody's at your outer perimeter and or somebody else has experienced somebody tripping their outer perimeter, and that data gets shared amongst the community, and it automatically adjusts the threat posture of all of your endpoints within your environment. It's awesome.
Tool or something?
It's a tool. It's integrated in with your endpoint protection. And so literally what it does is that you become part of like a cyber neighborhood watch. And so as malware or other threats are detected within the community basically shares. So McAfee has one called Threat Information Exchange. TI is the name of it. That's okay. What we use.
Okay.
We also, as part of an early high trust initiative, subscribe to their cyber threat exchange. What? Anomaly? Is that what it's called? See, I'm dating myself. SIM, Security Information and Event Monitoring. You cannot run your security program without it because it's beyond the realm of human comprehension. We talked about, you know, these 24/7 NOCs. This is how they're going to be watching. So if you don't have one, they might be able to provide you one, but at a minimum, that data all has to be aggregated and correlated so that as things happen, you can see exactly what all basically happens at the same time, almost real time.
Just an add-on to the SIM piece, you know, when you research that and select one, it's hard to know which one's the right one up front. And sometimes there are tools like Splunk that are far more technical in nature. And then there are some SIMs that are more business oriented and identity and access management oriented. We went the route of Splunk, and though it's a great tool, the stand-up time has been, we're in a year and a half now, and just now starting to get the point of actionable intelligence out of that.
Yeah.
And it requires some in-depth knowledge on how to manage that. So make sure if you're researching that it's a quick stand-up time if you don't have the technical staff to be able to manage it.
Yep.
And then you have to be concerned not only about the technical staff to manage it, but what happens if that technical staff decides they're going to go work somewhere else. Now you have to retrain, relearn. So there are some really, really big caution points when you're researching that.
Yeah, and I would argue another working group, if you will, would be to share tools because I call it, I've been in a lot of organizations, for example, especially state, where Colorado, the budgets, I went through probably 25 to 30% budget cuts over a 4 or 5 year period of time. I mean, we finally had to hack limbs off from a budgetary perspective. We were looking at open source tools. And so things like Spider that can scan your network for regular expressions. There are other tools that literally you can just acquire them and the vendor will say, well, if you want this feature, then you can start paying for it. So there's all kinds of those tools that we probably all have experience with that would be terrific for us to be able to share, you know, how does that scale and at what point do you need to start making investments because the scale isn't there anymore.
And that's one of the advantages of outsourcing it also, right? I don't have to worry about Alien World. I just have to worry about having those sensors in my servers, which did not take that long.
So anyway, but the list goes on and on and on. And yet at the same time, some of these tools, if you don't have knowledge, for example, asset management, I'd argue that you can't do vulnerability management if you're not doing asset management. Otherwise, you're flying blind. So some of these, you know, you could almost write a chart in terms of enabling technologies that you're going to have in order to really mature the program and get it to where it needs to be. That's not the purpose of today's presentation, but something to be aware of and something to think about as you are looking at your own organization's needs. Relative to phishing, so we've invested in a product called PhishMe at a cost of roughly $75,000. So that's what today's case study is about. We've had that tool in place now for roughly 9 months. And so I'll show you some statistics and some of the data and analysis that come out of that here in just a minute. So one of the things I like to talk about, and this kind of gets into some of the discussions I have. So similar to Wyatt, I'm not going to cover everything because Wyatt, I think, did a very eloquent job talking about not just the impact statements, but how to really engage and make people think about security versus it being kind of a statistic, right? But the one thing I like to talk about is IT leaders and business leaders, when they come together and they're looking at investing in a system, there's always the three things, or the three-legged stool: people, processes, and technology. It's never always just about one thing, and you can't be successful unless all three of those things come together. What I find ironic when we talk about cybersecurity, which is already a highly, highly complicated and very tough discussion, especially if you're having, you know, a threat or a tool and you're talking about a non-technical person about how to address that, is where's the people in the definition of what we're doing? It's hard enough to have the conversation, but there's nothing in here. You know, if you look at the formal definition, cybersecurity is the body of technologies, processes, and practices designed to protect networks, computers, and programs and data from attack, damage, or unauthorized access. That is boring. I mean, that doesn't really, it's going to make a non-technical person's eyes glaze over because they don't personify it. They don't think about what does that mean to me. And they don't even, there's not even the word people in it. So how do we make sure that that workforce, and that is a key word, because I can tell you our organization is focused predominantly on the employee aspect of the workforce. Contractors, not so much. I have a big concern about our contract population, especially in terms of how we educate and hold them accountable for things. So if we redefine it, similar to what Wyatt has done in his presentations, and you can hear a pin drop in the discussions that I have with employees at town halls, because it becomes very apparent that, oh, this does mean something to me, because if you don't do this, your children are potentially going to be bullied, cyber bullied. There's somebody that's going to maybe take a compromising picture or do something. Maybe your bank account gets emptied out and you don't have money anymore. Maybe if you've been texting, which everybody does, and you send personal emails, maybe you're not as nice of a person at work or at home as you are at work, and if those emails became public or those text messages became public, you might be embarrassed. You might lose some friends forever. Think about it. I even have those. It's like, oh, I wouldn't want that to get out. And you don't think about it because you think that that's safe and nobody would ever see that. That's not the case. So, and then, of course, most important to our crown jewels, which is the protected health information within our hospital, as well as member information, is keeping somebody from fulfilling our Cook Children's promise, trying to make that real relative to, you're here because you want to take care of kids. That's our promise. So how do we do that?
Just a quick addition as well, and I'm going to be quiet. I'm not going to say anymore.
No, it's interactive, please.
But there's such an impact on the personal side, but we have a social media presence within Health Alliance, and our communications department does a lot of great postings on that. And that does concern me from the space of, if someone compromises that account from a brand reputation perspective and someone posts something very negative about an elderly population,
absolutely,
and we're a Medicare plan, I mean, that really could have significant impact on something so simple that's easy to kind of get slipped under the radar. So pushing those two-factor authentications where possible, et cetera,
yep,
you know, it's making that personal touch goes a long, long way.
And to me, one of the bigger things, and you know, I talk about relationships with the other areas in the organization that you work in. We have an individual that is actually responsible for all things social media and how do we best leverage the platforms and do those things. Great partner, because she preaches those exact same things. We have a huge, I don't say problem, but it's certainly prevalent in healthcare. You'll get a nurse, she's been, you know, assigned to a particular case. The case ends up being something that happens that's not so good. And, you know, the next thing you know, there's a social media post out there, another angel has went to heaven, and, you know, I was in the NICU. And so you get these posts that not only are they a HIPAA violation, but they damage our reputation. And they potentially even could be grounds for somebody to sue us. So totally great point.
That's a great point. So Facebook and Twitter, and they have MFA enabled? They even have the MFA? That's a very good point.
I know that Facebook has some additional technologies to measure. Do some MFA. But the other pieces that we post on, we're just working with our communications department to control the access to the account.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So we talk and hear about the media every day, and Wyatt and I had this conversation earlier in the week. You very rarely hear the cause or the why in terms of, you hear about the breach, and you hear about dollars or cents in terms of what the impact was. Maybe you hear about, for example, with Sony Entertainment, there was a lot of emails published around directors and actors that couldn't get along. Some juicy stuff, right? Ironically, HBO, we didn't pay a ransom. It was a bounty. Did you know that? Have you heard that? Yeah. They paid the ransom. They absolutely paid the ransom. They just didn't want to be labeled as such. But that sort of stuff getting out causes damage. And so with that, their reputation gets impacted. If you're a Game of Thrones fan, spoiler, right? Anthem. We've talked about that. I think Mac had mentioned that a little bit. Now, what I didn't hear was exactly what happened with Anthem, right? So did you know? So we had, at an organization I was at previously, we had Roy Mellinger, he's the chief information security officer for Anthem, actually talk to my organization's board. And very fascinating, huge IT security shop, like 400 people. It's amazing how many people, right? Amazing how much money. But yet they still had the incident, phishing. And in the case of Anthem, it was an advanced persistent threat, meaning somebody was in their backyard for over a year, camped out, watching them. They had control of the whole place. They went on vacation at the same time that the IT staff went on vacation so that the tools and other monitoring processes wouldn't detect anything suspicious. Scary, scary that you could watch something like that. And it was only because one of the administrators ate lunch at their desk and saw a job that got kicked off that data was being exfiltrated, because they didn't do it, they didn't just do a big blow out to the internet. They were doing it in little tiny bite-sized chunks. And that scares me, because that's hard to detect. That's under the radar. That's like the stealth bomber in terms of data transfer. Scary. And some of this was mentioned already, but why would people want patient records or medical records? Lots of reasons. Identity impersonation. Now I can impersonate somebody and maybe get some free health care, right? If I'm China, which was the actor in this particular Anthem case, they're incredibly interested in our health care system. Theirs doesn't work. I'm not sure ours does, but but in any case, I guess something's better than nothing. I don't know. But in any case, understanding how we code things or how we diagnose things, that's important to them. iCloud and iTunes, I don't know that I need to say much more about that. You can Google pictures and everything else, but people get tricked into revealing their credentials, or they do things that put their credentials at risk, and now you've got compromising pictures out on the internet. WannaCry, WannaPetya. June 6, 2017, guess where I was at the day that attack took place? New employee orientation at Cook Children's. Yes, right? So here I am, I think it was day two, and I, you know, just happened to get some kind of alert from some former, you know, bulletin board I was a part of that, hey, we're seeing this thing kind of pop up. Thinking, okay. A couple hours later, ooh, it's really popping up. And then pretty soon the whole, you know, European Union's kind of lit up with this thing basically spreading, right? So culture moment, I leave new employee orientation, head back over to my new quote-unquote office, which I had never been to, and I talk to my boss, and I say, hey, what are we doing to communicate that we're analyzing the threat, that we're, you know, and I think within about 8 to 10 hours, somebody had posted a file that you could use to inoculate a device, and it would basically, if that file was present, Petya would ignore it and wouldn't infect the device because it thought it already infected it. Oh, well, you know, we have a distribution list. Go ahead and send something if you want. So I had a staff member review a communication, right? He forwards it to me. I forward it to what we call important, the important distribution list, meaning it goes to all 7,700 mailboxes that we have at Cook Children's Healthcare System. What I failed to notice was the entire GeekSpeak analysis of chain of emails that was underneath the announcement that I had sent out, right? And so I go running to the CIO's office. She's out. I tell the assistant, I am so sorry I screwed up. Please, if anybody calls, direct them to me. I'll take the heat. Because in other organizations, that's a very, very, very well-guarded communication tool. Here, different culture. It's a communication tool. It's used to get information out as quickly as possible, not to have a bully pulpit or anything like that, right? So two things happen. One, my bosses laugh at me because I'm telling them, hey, I'm so sorry. Don't worry about it. It happens all the time. Wait till you see so-and-so. They're always, you know, misspelling stuff. So I'm feeling better. And then the second thing that happens, we start getting providers going, wow, interesting conversation. You guys are doing some seriously hard work. And that's what that made my day. What was a horrible feeling in the pit of my stomach turned out to be something that's like, wow, I've really gotten to be part of something special here, right? And oh, by the way, it's my first week. So for those of you that don't know, from a Petya perspective, do you know how that one spread? How many people use H&R Block at home? So in Ukraine, in the European Union, there is a accounting software that's very, very prevalent. It's used by all kinds of small businesses. Through a phishing attack, the malware came in. The perpetrators modified an update to that software, which then was distributed as part of your accounting package update. Nice. Makes me think twice about H&R Block. Could happen to anybody. So when we talk about phishing and awareness, we try to provide things in the context of what we think the attack is going to look like, right? And they're vague and they're very subjective, but we try. Well, this is an email that's going to try to collect personal or company info, especially computer credentials. Be on the watch out for that. It's going to try to trick you. Might be a same color logo, might be an actual logo that they've forged. It's going to be something that maybe appeals to you. If they do a really good Amazon one, I am going to be very worried. How many people have Amazon Prime? Seriously. So watch those order statuses and watch out. Amazon, I have not yet seen, you know, asks you to enter your credentials to verify your package is safe. I'm sure that one's coming, but that's a good example. And then there's a sense of urgency. We're going to send your package back if you don't click here right now. Or to the point you made, and I hadn't thought about this, but it's scary. Click here to verify your daughter's computer soccer account or verify their medical information. Something that's going to appeal to you personally. I know my kids, like number one in my life in terms of worrying about stuff. And then we talk about curiosity, greed, fear. So we kind of have these tenets, if you will, around how we treat security. Again, a lot of them have been talked about, but technology alone, it's never enough. In order to really mitigate risk, it's that people, process, and technology all coming together. Although we invest heavily in cybersecurity, our workforce is the most valuable and front line of defense that we have. You said it perfectly. Awareness, education, and training are the keys to the success that we're going to have. and we want to create that culture of security, that neighborhood watch in terms of looking for suspicious telephone calls, emails. And I can tell you, if you engage people personally, and that's what Cook Children's requires, because you know we've went from 3,000 to 7,700 employees in the span of 3, 4, 5 years, we still think we're small. We still expect our leaders to talk to us, not just to get a form letter or not just to say, press this button to report this. I get emails, phone calls constantly. Aaron, what do you think of this? And some of it's nothing. But you know what? I appreciate the fact that they took the time to call me. And I always make sure they know that. I have a big giant box of goldfish that I keep in my office. I get them at Costco, like 40 pack. And so my team knows, hey, go send that person some goldfish. It's not much, but you get a pack of goldfish in the mail, you're going to have a smile on your face. And you're going to remember you did something good, right? So, kind of cool. So, with respect to our awareness campaign, we actually contracted in December of 2016. I didn't talk about this earlier, but one of the neat things that comes with our simulator, or at least with FishMe service, free awareness posters, free awareness training, online videos. Chief Knowledge Officer. Well, now I have to, okay. I'll talk about this here in a minute. It's part of our lessons learned, right? But it's a treasure trove. We are still looking to get a seat at the table relative to new employee orientation. We talk about, like for example, social media and the do's and the don'ts, but we don't have a presence there from a cybersecurity perspective that is beginning to set that tone, that cultural tone, with the new workforce members coming in. I promise you that is going to change, but I have to be careful. I have to make sure my cultural awareness doesn't interfere with the rest of the organizations, but we'll get there. With respect to how this works, FishMe provides templates of all kinds of different phishing attacks. They have different categories that they label them. So it allows us to go in and customize based upon what we're seeing out in the wild. So we can customize that message, and most importantly, we can capture metrics on who's opening emails. We even know where people are reading emails from, and it is amazing. There will be people, literally, and at first I thought, we have a security issue, but that's how much people travel in our organization. They go internationally, a lot. I would have never dreamed how much that happens. So that gives us some metrics around what to be concerned about and maybe what not to be. Prior to doing the phishing simulators, we did what most organizations do, which is emails sent out once a week. We go marching from department to department. We're still going to do those things, but we know this was not enough. And so this is just some information about where we came from relative to this. USB drives, here's our materials. Ironically, we don't want you using a USB drive that's unsecured. Double negative or mixed messages, right? So this is kind of an email that we have branded from a security program perspective. We have our weak link chain culture of security. And these are the kinds of emails that I actually do send out on a weekly and a monthly basis. And I try to make it almost like a social media following kind of thing, and it works. I try to pick things that are important. Hey, as a heads up, are you aware that, for example, Equifax, and more than half of us should be impacted, and here's the website you go to. It was amazing how many people don't follow the news and didn't know that. But why would I do that? Think about that personal information that has been released as a result of the Equifax breach. We did a real quick risk assessment after that breach was announced. Our service desk still uses the last four numbers of the Social Security number for validation that it's you and before I reset your password. Now, if you add on top of that, that there's a good likelihood that some people have used their work email to apply for things like credit cards or other things. Half of the country's information is now in the hands of people that can impersonate you by looking at that data and where you evidently work. That is scary. And so by sending that information then onto legal, HR. I'm like, who else is validating personal information as part of the way our organization is working? A lot. So if you have a benefits department and they've outsourced things, you might want to have a conversation with them as a result of this Equifax breach and make sure that they are asking something that would only be known within the walls of your organization. So for us, employee ID number is not published anywhere. So we're adding that as a second factor of verification. We're going to move away from Social Security numbers, obviously. But you'll want to look at that just as a result of that kind of topical news.
So we have a policy. I'm not allowed to send all employees email, employee to all emails. Nobody's allowed unless there's an emergency. So what I do is I create these emails also, and I'll send it to managers and above, supervisors and above. And then I'm relying on them to disseminate it. Do you guys have a similar kind of challenge? How do we make sure associates are getting those?
Yeah, I have in every organization I've worked in until this one. And I would anticipate, and I'll talk more about this because it's an issue, it's the email noise. Everybody wants to target everybody, and there needs to be some sort of sanity or traffic cop that's helping to really decide what's important and what's not. Otherwise, you lose everybody. They're just going to hit delete because the information's not relevant or really critical.
On the flip side, like, I seriously think the messages I'm sending, not that I love Manji, but that these are really important messages for people to know. But because of that policy, I cannot send it.
Yep.
And all these managers, they have their day jobs. This is not their priority. Although we keep driving the message from the top, you have to read it. But I wish there was an easy way for me. We put it on our intranet and all also. But it would be easier if I'm sending once a month or as the scam come, people are actually reading them.
And we kind of do, I do the same thing. It's a monthly case study. It's real live that goes out there. I send it to the directors, and I even put bullet points. Here's your key points to discuss in your team meetings. Then they have to come back and tell me that what day. We just discussed this with my team. And then I keep a running spreadsheet of the date that they, and if I have a hole for that month, I reach out, when did you do it, or when are you planning on doing it? So there's a feedback, and then I keep every one of them. So in an OCR audit, they can ask me, what do you do? Here's what I've sent, and here's the acknowledgement. I keep their email saying, we discussed this in team meeting. And sometimes employees after the team meeting will come and ask me one-on-one questions. And yep. it is
you
everything.
You know you get through when that happens.
I know. I know that director
yep.
did it. And we do. We do the phishing, through computers, email. We do phone. I took a video, a YouTube from DEF CON. It was the coolest one, too, where they played a baby noise on their computer, and she acted like she was a distraught mom, and I've lost my email, my AT&T password, and I can't get it. And just like Max said, Americans want to help. Oh, I hear the baby in the back. You poor thing. Yes, here's your husband's account information, and she got it like that. So those kind of things, the real life kind of things, and if you can make it personal, like it's going to hit them at home too. I have their attention. So yeah, we're doing the same thing.
Just to follow up on the email best practice, I know we have a dissemination list. We call it the cascading update. So generally, things that aren't an emergency, we would cascade up to Scott, and then it would go into a cascading update that is delivered, I think, once a week or twice a month. And that comes from our COO, and then it cascades to the next layer and cascades down, et cetera. So that's a good way to do that for the non-emergent type of things. For those things that are emergent, we actually have an ABC format that is followed. So if it does go to all staff, number one, staff know to look for is the external email banner in the subject line and the message, like this came from outside the organization. But also, did this follow the format that it's supposed to follow? And if those two things are off, those are two immediate warnings that this might be a fake message.
Yeah, one other trick you can use, too, if you're looking to try to see what your penetration is, there's a software called PoliteMail that will actually put a tracking pixel within your email, and you can then get a heuristic report on how many people are actually opening it, how many people just hit delete, that sort of thing. So that might be something that's helpful. So our methodology relative to our fishing simulations, we actually do a monthly scenario. So we basically kind of plan that based upon fishing attacks that we see out in the wild. We try to model after those. We then take and evaluate the data. We actually have a monthly conference call with FishMe, who walks us through the data. And they compare us. They do benchmarking relative to where we are in our, you know, progress, awareness progress. And then we also look at repeat offenders. So we get a report on who's done it 6 times, right? So you're starting to go, okay, just culture's getting a little, you know, narrow here. These are people that aren't listening. Now, I will say, ironically, FishMe indicates that they've actually had people who clicked on it because they wanted to see the awareness training that comes after the click. I don't know if they're just saying that or not. We also take a look at high-risk groups, so HR, finance, IT. I wish I could say IT was doing as well as it could. We had 50 out of 350 staff members that clicked on last month's phishing attack. So I have work to do relative to that. And then we evaluate the data. Now, what does that mean? It means that the goal isn't to trick everybody. The goal isn't to win, to beat the organization. The goal is to figure out where we start to ebb and flow relative to the awareness training, and then to target that knowledge level so that we can begin to raise the bar. That's our goal. Types of scenarios, these are the different types of basically attacks, click only, where maybe you've got malware that could get dropped by virtue of the link being clicked. There's an attachment that you're going to open which might run some sort of scripts that might result in an infection or exfiltration of data. And then last but not least, the worst, which is the actual data entry, where your credentials basically have been handed over to the bad guys. Themes, they run from office events, news and events, personal matters, employee benefits, same sort of motivators. We're, again, simulating things, right? So our first, and I'll go through these as fast or as slow as you want to, but our first simulation was in January of 2017, where we basically indicated you've got a package that's being delivered. 26% of our population fell for this. I would have never dreamed that. It looks obvious to me. Well, and I'll talk more about this, but again, I think, you know, we have to be cognizant that we are IT people, and so we're not thinking necessarily like a non-IT person. We're not thinking in terms of, you know, what grade level does the media target whenever they're issuing news reports? Pretty low. Fourth grade? Third or fourth. Right? So maybe we're not doing something right. Maybe we need another point of view at the table as we're developing our scenarios. That's a lesson learned for us. So there should have been a bunch of key indicators. I won't go through this because we're probably running a little short on time. But what we do as part of our post follow-up with the organization, we actually will send out an awareness email saying, this is what you should have seen, right? In March, we really wanted to get funky. We introduced the new donut drone delivery service for our area. You know, I want my donuts, get them now. So this was actually a fun thing we did with the organization. FishMe, as part of its service, actually has an Outlook plugin that comes with the service that literally you have to install it, and as part of that installation, right, you have to click on something. I know. But what ends up happening is you get a button that says, you know, report phishing as part of that service. So this, we actually told the organization we were, you know, letting this fly, so to speak. And this is how we got the buttons out to the desktops. So it was a fun way for us to kind of reintroduce, this is what we're doing. And it's something that FishMe recommended. It's a way to kind of, you know, continue to break the ice. Later on in the month, though, as a result of it being close to tax day, we actually sent out a tax form. Now, I mentioned that we had had a spear phishing attack with respect to our finance department, right? Ironically, we had just sent this out, and it was the same individual's name that the real spear phishing attack came in on. Yeah, we were. That's why we were so impressed, because the finance department picked up on it. They had went through this exercise, and it was enough that they educated. We felt good. Hey, it's working. But because it was close enough to tax day, almost 20% fell for it, and we only had 9% report it. And this is what you'll see if you fall for it. So if you haven't done so already, you want to make sure your CEO and your senior leadership is on board, because otherwise, if you know, it kind of goes back to the comment that was made during the White Hat attack. You could get prosecuted for phishing your own staff.
I'm actually thinking of not telling anyone and see how many senior leaders fall for it.
Desk, I don't tell my network, I don't tell senior executives, president and I are the only ones that know. Yeah, and it's so sad when all the directors hit it. It's like, if I can't get top to understand, and how am I going to get below? Yeah. And that's what hurts. And, but yeah, we don't tell a soul.
Yeah, and to clarify, we sought permission to do this as a program. We don't tell when we launch the simulations.
Right.
We don't. So
to nobody?
Only the service desk and only a select.
Executives?
Yes.
That's, no, I was just thinking we won't tell anybody, or service desk for sure, but then I won't publicize the results if one of the senior executives fell for it.
I have a story I'm going to share at the end of this deck that
and the good
could
thing
be a career-limiting move.
But then I have new connections now.
All right. So I'll just quickly go through these. Actually, I'm not going to, but... The one thing I will mention is we always say thank you. We always go back to everybody that reports and we thank them. We do mass communications. We're going to be doing some additional things. I'll talk about it in a minute, but it works. People really feel like they're part of the team. They feel like that they're actually part of something and they're helping. And that's a huge thing when you're trying to build that culture. And I wanted to call that out. So this is an example of what they would see. Get a nice attaboy. Not so much.
This is part of your tool?
It is. Okay. Yes. Yes. And we customize these. So again, you have, and I'm not sure if it's in this deck, but what I will do is to publish via the portal. I'll publish the actual report that FishMe provides. So it'll give you some more context as to what it is. And then I believe FishMe offers free demonstrations of their tool set. But it's got everything you need in a box. And you can customize it any way, shape, or form that you want to make it more appealing to your particular population.
The only challenge I have is we're a small company. I don't have 80 grand for this thing.
Well, I think it's based upon scale, right? So we're 7,700 mailboxes. If you've got 200, I don't think you're going to pay the same price.
Okay, makes sense.
And that might be an opportunity. We talked about leveraging volume-based pricing. Another potential opportunity, right?
So, Aaron, you have your show. I noticed in almost every email you have that mark that external email. So is that just for your phishing email, or you actually implement a tool that every external email you got for employee, it's marked that?
Terrific question. It is actually part of our Proofpoint service within our mail gateway.
Okay.
So every email that comes from the outside of the organization into the organization gets marked with this tag. And what that does, you know, is we do awareness training and education. We talk to people. We actually point to this as one of the key indicators that you should immediately be on the lookout. If you get that email that's got that red bar, and we've actually enclosed it now with a I believe it's an orange banner. If you see that, you need to immediately be cautious of this email and verify what it is that you're looking at.
Does that sign show off only after you opened the email, or actually there's some sign on the subject?
It's inserted. So as it passes, before it gets to your mailbox, as it passes through the mail system, it gets inserted into the message body of the email.
Yeah, so my question is, like, you know, when I look at my email, there are like 20 emails there. Do you have any sign on the subject? You know, before I even open the email, I know this is external email?
We do not do that. What we are looking at doing, and I'll talk more about this as part of some of our lessons learned, is we're looking at kind of, I would say, badging emails. So this is our first, this is like generation one in terms of tagging or badging emails.
Okay.
But what we want to do is to create a trust system that you're going to have some sort of digital certificate embedded in the email that's going to make this be an official Cook Children's email that you can trust and know that it's not from, regardless of whether it's outside or inside, if it has that digital certificate, it's an email that you can trust, and you don't have to worry about a phishing attack.
Okay. Thank you.
But that's a good point. We use Mimecast, and we use that to insert into the same mail body. But I'm going to see if they have the ability to put it in a header, a subject also.
Yep. Yep.
Do you also whitelist some of the partners you do business with?
We do.
Okay.
We do, and we also have TLS enabled on our mail gateway as well. And what that'll do, so we can encrypt email messages by putting the word secure in the subject line,
right,
like most organizations. And then what Proofpoint also will do is if the destination email has TLS enabled as well, it will automatically negotiate a TLS session and establish a secure tunnel across the internet so that that email is delivered, quote unquote, untouched. So this is an example of just basically a roll-up. This is an excerpt of the report, the monthly report that PhishMe will provide you. Basically, they'll talk a little bit about, okay, an inbox over the limit data entry phishing scenario was executed. Simulation encouraged the user to increase their sending quota. And it just basically tells you, you know, in a nutshell, it's like an executive summary, if you will. Why is this important? Because, again, we're trying to use a common language. I present this data to our senior leadership team. In fact, it was just 2 weeks ago. Every person with a title of director or above, I basically provided an excerpt of this presentation to show our progress and how we were doing. And then we provide a summary in terms of what the clues were that should have been looked at. We also get analytics as a result of procuring the service. So this gives us an idea. Okay, 7,700 emails were sent, 12%. This was actually the most recent one, which lets us know that we're at the bar relative to our awareness, and we're going to stay there until we can demonstrate progress. But 12% fell for the fish last month, or in July, rather. 6% clicked the link and then went, oh, this doesn't look good. I don't want to provide my credentials. But another 6% actually provided their credentials. And I'm very careful to say, they willingly provided their login credentials to potential hackers. It's not that I'm trying to create a wall of shame. It's just that's what we're trying to prevent. And even though that doesn't sound like a very large number, 10 or 11%, 70 some odd people, it's the magnitude of the threat that's most important. It's that one piece of email that gets through, and then you end up starting having the lateral movement of the...
It just takes one.
It does.
One thing as far as the wall of shame goes, we actually, you know, I had to fight pretty hard when we started implementing our phishing testing to state, I will not publish the names of those that clicked. Because there were people in senior staff that wanted to know. I was like, at the end of the day, that's irrelevant. It's not about getting someone in trouble. It's helping everyone to be on board the same ship. So that's a battle we definitely are very passionate about, that it is not about punitive. It is about everybody being on board. And we do not publish the names of those that clicked. We protect that.
So on our side, in that InfoTech report I gave you with our pen testing and our phishing simulation that we did, I had a director give the credentials, and we could see it go through. And actually, again, I don't tell my staff at all. My network guy comes to me, and he said, hey, is Carla here today? Oh, I just gave you guys her name, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to do that, too. So
yeah, and I said, I don't know. Why, Dwayne? You know, I know what's happening. I saw Carla put her credentials in. She's a director of enrollment. Social Security numbers, everything, right? So I don't know. Why are you asking? Well, she's VPNing in, and it doesn't make sense if she's here. It's like, well, get up and go see. Oh, she's here. We have a problem. And he reacted, yes, a little too late. But the hacker, I'm sitting there watching him going through my network, and he's hitting this one PC, and it's an accounting clerk. PC. And Lisa's not here. It's her staff. And he took spreadsheets that had people's ACH numbers and things like that. And it hit me. It's like, why is he after David's PC? And you know what it is? It was a light bulb moment. And this is my fourth year of doing the simulation. We, IT, name the PCs by the departments. Well, heck yes. If I'm a hacker, I'm going to go accounting, IT, and medical. Yeah. Where else? There's code, there's ACH, and there's medical records. So now we're renaming everybody's PCs by just sequential numbers. It's hard for us. And, you know, those people always remote to their PCs,
yes,
in conference rooms.
Yes.
Oh, they're complaining because they don't know
That's
what their
smart.
Number is.
Is
My
so
help
smart.
Desk tickets went up. But the pushback is, you guys, an accounting PC got hacked without a password on a spreadsheet, and he now has the bank account numbers.
And that's
perfect.
That's the battle, right? When we push things out from a security perspective, the initial battle is from the support center saying, oh my gosh, help desk tickets have just skyrocketed. But we have to be able to articulate the fact and work with them prior. Yes, they're going to skyrocket initially, but that's not going to be a standard. It's going to come back down on that curve. So we just have to ride out that storm and educate appropriately, you know, with the support center so they're on board.
I think one thing which worked out in my favor is I have the help desk with me, so I overrule it. Okay, I don't really care about that.
Yeah.
So the other metric we capture is the fact that, hey, we see new reporters that show up, right? So in our case in July, almost 200 people more than last month pushed that button to let us know. Now, I'm still getting people that forward me the email, hey, is this safe? And it's like, I can sustain this for a little while, but no. That, congratulations. You found the fish. Yeah. We appreciate you.
We've had people reply to my ethical hacker, it's okay to click on this? Well, the hacker says yes.
Yes, I've had that too. Is this safe? Is this
forward
safe?
Forward the like, email.
Yes. Yes. And it's like, you know what? I'd rather you be safer than sorry.
Yeah.
I totally,
yeah,
you know.
Nah, forward it to our help desk.
Right. So relative to trends, this kind of shows as we are basically moving up or down relative to each of the categories. I'm not going to, again, go through a whole lot of it, but these are all, the point being, these are the types of powerful analytics that you're going to have relative to these kinds of phishing simulators. They're huge, and they allow you to make decisions based upon where you're trying to push the organization. Offenders, this is something we're still working on. It's a lesson learned I'll talk about, but you know, we have at least 30% that's doing it twice so far with the running total. Three times, 10% have fallen for it. And then way out here, there's one or two people I'm going to go have to have a conversation with them or their boss or supervisor and say, what do we need to do? Because you obviously need a license to drive your PC.
Question, though, on the repeats. Because when we look at the analytics, there's those that opened the email but didn't do anything with it. Is that what qualifies as the repeat in that column five? Because if someone has their Outlook preview pane on, it's going to happen every time.
Yeah, we don't. It the simulator is smart enough to know it's not the preview pane. Now, I don't know the technology behind that, but as I understand it, they also use pixel tracking within their phishing simulations that will avoid the preview window from triggering that.
So even in that scenario, that column five, are these the entered data classification, or are they just opened classification?
They clicked the link and or provided the data. Yeah, it's the worst
case.
Yeah,
they need a license.
Yeah.
One of the things which I do with my managers and above, I tell them, if you are the repeat offenders, you have to come for a five-mile run with me or do push-ups or wall sit, whatever you hate, that's what I'm going to make you do.
Yeah, my previous organization, both you and your supervisor had to go back through HIPAA training as a first-time offense. That's 8 to 10 hours of your life you do not get back, right? So that was a heavy – so those are things I'm going to be looking at. So real quick, what are some interesting fines and unintended consequences? Well, number one, I talked about this a little bit. Corporate communications is crazy. There are all kinds of partners that we are doing business with. We have open enrollment. They're sending emails. We have health and wellness. They're sending emails. We have at least 18 partners that are, and I hate to use the word spamming, that are spamming our population. So there's this huge amount of noise relative to emails, and they're marking them as phishing. So they're, in certain cases, so bad that our employees believe that they're phishing. So how can I increase or raise the bar relative to phishing awareness when our partners are sending poorly worded and poorly punctuated emails, and they don't look like cooked children's emails? So I'll talk about it in a minute. So that's a aha. We can't do better unless we clean up the email environment. That gets into spam and phishing. We have a lot of people that they think solicitations are phishing. So that's sometimes hard, because sometimes it can be solicitation, but asking for information. We get physicians that get very passionate and irate. So in July, I kind of went through it quickly. If you talk about removing service, especially an IT service, or saying, your mailbox is full, click here to get more space. We had providers that were like, how dare you? How dare you? My space is my space. I shouldn't have to ask for more space. You should just give me more space. I don't have time to deal with this, right? So there's a sensitivity there too that helps us to understand it's not just security, it's service. Maybe customer service, and maybe some customer service expectations. And then with respect to the motivators, interesting trends. We haven't worked it out yet, but there are certain things that people are drawn to, and others, they just kind of, don't care. So what we know is that based upon a maybe 1 in 5 chance of an employee clicking on something or a workforce member clicking on something, if our email gateway protection fails, we are at risk, big time. We're at risk if one manages to sail through. Very low probability, but again, high impact. We know that training and awareness is hard. We kind of sort of ran out of arrows in our quiver, so what are we going to do about it? Repeat offenders, we don't have a policy in place. We have IT policies and IT security policies that talk about taking away access, but we've not linked it to something like this, which is your judgment in how you use the computer. We need to figure out from HR what are their thoughts relative to that. Is it forced training? Is it sanctions? If so, how far? Got to clean up the corporate email noise, and then ultimately the clock is ticking on how sophisticated these phishing attacks get, big time. It's only a matter of time. I mean, and we're already seeing it. I've seen several that have been through Navy Federal Credit Union and Box.com, where it looks like a bona fide legitimate invoice. went to my CTO. He's like, we don't do, or I don't do business with Box. But boy, I sure would have clicked on that if I did. That's scary. So what are we going to do as far as next steps? We're going to keep running our simulations at the current complexity level. So we'll make a judgment call as to what we think that is. We have already engaged, so this deck is about 30 days old. When I talk about developing relationships across the organization, our director of communications was like, thank you. I would love to partner with you on branding emails across the whole health system. Emails that are soliciting things that are, and or needing, you know, we had a benefits provider that was trying to basically verify eligibility information for dependents. Horrible looking emails. But if we could make them all look like Cook Children's with logos, we could make them safe, brand them, not only in terms of the visualization, but also a digital certificate. We can get rid of that red bar across there, and now we don't have to talk about those being internal or external. They're whitelisted and they're secure. And the big one that I kind of hit upon earlier, I talked about all those materials, the posters and things that you can hand out. Now, they're the scary things. Like, you remember the screen, I think it was Mac, that had hooded guy over the keyboard. I mean, that's almost like every cybersecurity presentation I've been at. I don't know who owns that card stock, but they hopefully get a nickel for every time it's displayed. But they're scary looking. We're in a pediatric facility, right? FishMe's never worked with anybody in pediatrics before. However, what I suggested is, you know, we've got this really neat dragon. It's called Steps the Dragon. And if you go to our hospital, literally there's these blue peaks and it looks like there's dragon scales on the top of our hospital. And so we're going to partner with FishMe and they're going to actually help develop some child-friendly materials that we can hang up and not worry about, you know, maybe scaring people. Yeah. Exactly. So that'll be helpful. And oh, by the way, wouldn't those parents benefit from that same information? It's not about our workforce. It's about like what Wyatt was talking about. It's about what you do at home too. The other thing is grassroots. I love that word because it means diversity. It means pulling people together and getting those diverse points of view. How do we engage our employees? Let's get the employees part of a decision-making body that helps us to decide what's suspicious or how to articulate some of this language in a way that their peers would understand. That's huge. Being able to basically solicit those opinions and then mold it into what I would call security awareness training or phishing 2.0 relative to the awareness.
Aaron, you made me just remember something that another one of our health plans does, and you might remember it's Health First. I don't know if you remember the name of the vendor they use, but the comment about the awareness for the parents of the children. One of our health plans actually proactively is just, if you're a member of their health plan, they pay for you to have a service. I think it's like LifeLock. I don't think it's what it's called. It's like a free monitoring, identity theft monitoring program. And just proactively, every member in their organization that, you know, is a member gets that as part of their membership benefits. It's like a gym membership, right? And they do a lot of proactive education with their population.
That
They're
would be
in
a
Florida.
Neat case study. That would be a neat case study.
Yeah, it's we actually have that. We do have that case study, and I can send that out to this group.
Oh, I think that would be great.
And it's because they're in Florida. They're primarily like Medicare plan, and you know that's a population that's targeted, you know, so powerfully. And anyway, so I just you made me
yeah,
remember it.
Yeah. No. Great.
Oh, what?
Our antivirus licensing, we permit employees to take our enterprise antivirus to utilize on their home computers.
That's really good. Anyway, so wrapping up, the other thing we're looking at is a formalized process for handling repeat offenders. What are those sanctions going to be? What are the most, vulnerable of our populations? Brown bag luncheons. So the response has been so overwhelming with us going out and visiting with departments. We're going to try to schedule like lunch and learns, pie and privacy, I don't know, something really catchy like that that will make people kind of want to come in and just talk. It's been amazing. It hasn't been the presentations per se, but the conversations around some of the topics that these presentations trigger results in just really neat information sharing. And I would love to see that kind of dialogue take place as part of our employee workforce training. And the other thing is contests and promotions. So we have 9 companies, right? Why not have a company-wide contest, health plan versus home health versus medical center, in terms of the scoring and where they are? Anyway. So I'll close with Dilbert, patron saint of all things geekdom, right? It's not the frontline people. It's management.
Yeah.
And someone brought that up earlier. So I will not name names, but my first IT steering committee relative to my organization, the president of each of the companies come together to weigh in on the investments that we're going to be making from a technology perspective. The CIO, CTO, CISO, we're also there. First thing gets brought up, people are laughing and making fun of each other for having clicked on the phishing simulation. So right away I'm knowing, oh, culture, again, they're able to make fun of each other for that happening. Now, without going too far, head of our hospital, who shall name nameless, I happened to be presenting a similar sort of slide deck, and she was the one that was kind of being made fun of. And anyway, I don't know how it happened. I don't know why it happened, but I am presenting to roughly 400 people in this huge auditorium, and I look down, and Mr. Merrill, our CEO, is literally right there, and I have a rule of thumb, which is to never look anybody on the front row in the eye because you'll lose your train of thought. I did. It's my first time presenting, and I look up, and all I see in a bright, pretty orange jumpsuit, the head of the hospital. And I call her out in front of everybody on the phishing. And again, culture-wise, it was okay. Everybody got the whole audience exploded in laughter. I had another vice president stand up and go, am I a repeat offender? And so it became, even though it was a slip on my part and potentially a career-limiting move, because that could have went anyway, it didn't. And it really became more about, we're this family that has to look out for each other. So I share that as kind of a personal scary moment, but that turned out okay. Hopefully nobody's listening to this that knows me. But in any case, I thought that was a great way to finish the deck. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them. Otherwise, it's been a great discussion, and thank you for being attentive.